You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, and welcome to tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I am your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, November the 16th, and we're coming to you live, as always, every Saturday night from Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship radio studio, and going out, of course, to the Internet, to our global audience worldwide at thepoliticalcesspool.org, as we are simulcasted on the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. Came in here on a couple of wheels tonight, haven't been out of town the last 2 days for work. Flew back into Memphis, got in town about 4 o'clock, 2 hours prior to showtime, made a beeline to the studio, and here we are. The show must go on, and go on at will tonight, and we're back at full strength after having been out of town last week and having the birthday show a couple of weeks ago. Everything is settling back down into normalcy, which is a good thing for us because our normal shows are, if I do say so myself, I think, quite brilliant, and I know a lot of listeners would agree with us because we get that correspondence and that feedback every single day. Keith Alexander back with me in the studio tonight. Keith, great to be reunited with you and back onto an even keel and back to the tried and true routine that we have set up here as our template here in the political cesspool.
I tell you, James, I've been running the liberal gauntlet over the past week, and particularly today, and I'm just itching to share all of my adventures in the opposite of paradise with the listening audience tonight.
Well, listen, I was going to go straight to the mail, but by all means, you've whetted the appetite. All right, Keith insists we go to the mail first, and then we're going to find out what Keith's misadventures have been. But it is great to be back after having traveled really quite a bit. I was in Nashville last weekend and then out of town another couple of days later in the week and having just returned. Great to be back in the studio with our friends from around the world. Our listening audience is quite prescient, Keith. I had a couple of emails come into me this week refer to topics that I had already planned in advance to cover, and we'll just go to a couple of them. Number one, this comes from Eric in Jonesboro, Georgia, which is not too far from Atlanta, and he writes, James, I'm a big fan of your program. I think a good show topic for this week's broadcast is the Atlanta Braves move to the northern suburbs. The Braves organization realizes that their fan base is coming from outside of the inner city. No one wants to go to Atlanta for the same reasons people do not want to go to Detroit. Could you please talk about this and keep up the great work? And that was signed sincerely, Eric in Jonesboro. And Eric, as it turned out, I had picked up on this story from my friend Countenance. And Countenance is a gentleman who I met through the Council of Conservative Citizens who maintains a blog that is among my daily reads. And he wrote just a real quick hit entitled Going Gone about this very topic that you bring up, and he writes that the Atlanta Braves want to leave Turner Field, which was built only in 1996 as a centennial Olympic stadium for the 1996 Summer Olympics, and then remodeled into a baseball stadium the next year for the Braves. But now the Atlanta Braves want to move to a new home on the I-75, I-285 junction in Cobb County. Why do they want to abandon a relatively new baseball stadium when and then have to build a new suburban digs? And the answer, according to Countenance, and I think as Eric would agree, is white flight. The media is mystified that in spite of the team's propaganda that the new stadium would have better transportation options, that traffic in that part of Atlanta is even worse than what it is in downtown, and that MARTA doesn't have service to that area where the Braves will be moving. And if people know anything about Atlanta, and I've been there many times in my life, MARTA is their transit system, sort of like a trolley, but public transit rail. And MARTA, they say, stands for Moving Africans Rapidly Through Atlanta. It just kind of gets them from place to place with relative ease. And another problem is that the Braves have lethargic attendance figures in spite of being a perennial winner. Yes, part of the problem is that Turner Field's current location is very close to a whole lot of the undertow. But Atlanta sports fans are rather fickle, mainly because a whole lot of white Atlanta is from somewhere else. So I think Countenance and Eric, our listener who had written in, are kind of seeing the same things, the Atlanta Braves leaving a relatively new baseball stadium to move outside of the downtown inner city Atlanta.
And James, baseball in particular seems to be a hard sell with the African-American community here in America. Of all of these major sports, baseball seems to be wringing its hands about the lack of homegrown black Americans among the ranks of its players. In fact, they have a program that they have here in Memphis and throughout the nation that is sponsored by Major League Baseball, by the National League and the American League, the Major League Baseball Leagues of America, called the RBI program. RBI stands for Return Baseball to the Inner City. And it's a perfect example of white guilt in action. For example, we have an NBA, National Basketball Association, team in Memphis called the Memphis Grizzlies. And if blacks are underrepresented in the eyes of the powers that be in professional sports, in professional baseball, then what about white people in the NBA, homegrown American whites? The only whites that you see for the most part on an NBA court are Europeans, because they're not bludgeoned into thinking they're inferior in basketball the way that American white kids are. Whites are still 2/3 approximately of the population, general population of America, but they are less than 5% of the population of the players in the NBA. But unlike the RBI program in Major League Baseball, I don't see any RBS program in sponsored by the NBA. That would stand for Return Basketball to the Suburbs, where the white people are. Just like the suburbs are where this Atlanta Braves team is moving its stadium, because that's where all the fans are, that's where all the players are and potential players. This is where the action is. And quite frankly, if you go to an NBA or an NFL, National Football League, game, the stands are a proliferation of white people. The only black people there are people basically that have been given a free ticket. But nonetheless, our powers that be, our elites, continue to slavishly pander to black people. But where the rubber meets the road, where the money talks and BS walks, you find out that, again, white people are the economic engine that drives prosperity, and Major League sports, including Major League Baseball, is no exception.
That was an absolutely excellent analysis, Keith. And I'll tell you, you brought up something that reminded me of a story we had covered last year. The NBA gets an A-plus diversity rating because it's 90% black. And so to say that they're overrepresented there is an understatement. But as you basically said, you can complain about there not being enough blacks in baseball because that's politically correct. But if you talk about how underrepresented whites are in the NBA, of course, you're a racist for even considering it. The double standards continue. But last year, the Minnesota Timberwolves had, I believe, 5 or 6 white players on their team. So about 50% of the Minnesota team was white, which they were still grossly underrepresented. But of course, there were charges of racism hurled at the Timberwolves organization for daring to have 6 white players. But in the countless numbers of NBA teams, that every player on the roster is black. Well, that's just great diversity and multiculturalism. A plus for them. We'll be back, folks. We're just getting started.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. That number again, 801-216-4816.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool. Just getting started, and like I said, I'm just so excited that we're back to a routine night in the studio together. Keith and I, not on the road, not traveling. I mean, the birthday party was fun, of course, but it's just good to get back and just sink your teeth into our standard fare. And I got an email here. I don't know if you listened to the show, Keith. You happened to be out one of the rare nights. I was sharing with Keith that he actually misses less shows per year than I do. I think I might miss maybe 4 or 5 a year. Keith maybe misses 2. And one of those 2 weeks happened to be 2 weeks ago, the week before our remote broadcast from Nashville last week. And I don't know if you got a chance to go back and listen to it in the archives, Keith, but Eddie and I were catching up on some mail that had come in the week after the birthday celebration, which was, of course, the last weekend in October. And we rattled off listener correspondence for the first 30 minutes of the show, a little extra time. And I think we must have read mail or mentioned that mail had come in just the course of a couple of days from 12 different countries and, of course, all around the United States. And I got an email here from a listener in Sweden that I'm excited to share with you because, believe it or not, and I don't guess this will come as a shock to anyone, but Sweden is actually a bastion of cesspool fandom. Out of all of the foreign countries, I would say Sweden rounds out the top three in terms of places from which we receive mail behind the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom, which, of course, Canada because of its proximity to the United States and the United Kingdom because of the close relationship we've shared with the mothership historically. But Sweden, we get a lot of mail from Sweden. We got one from a listener who's writing to us from Sweden for the first time, and he writes, "Hello, James. I'm a faithful listener from the politically correct high ground called Sweden. I'm tuning into your show every week, and let me just say, it's a true beacon of light in these dark times. I'm an atheist myself and used to despise Christians, just like the Jewish-run media wanted me to. But your program has turned me around, and I realize that we all need to unite and fight together in order to turn this ship around. Keep up the good work, and please tell Mr. Alexander that I admire him so much. His historical revision work is outstanding. I've learned so much listening to your show, and it made me realize we need to question everything we used to know." That comes from Klaus in Sweden, Keith, and I'm going to follow that up with a story that came from Sweden this week that popped up on Toro Radar, unrelated to Klaus's email, but I'm sure you'd probably like to respond to Klaus and our entire European audience.
Well, I would first of all like to thank Klaus for his kind words. It's wonderful to know that people throughout the globe, and particularly white people in places like Scandinavia, find inspiration in our broadcast. It's the type of thing, it's the wind under our wings, as the old song from the 70s said. And furthermore, he's absolutely right. Turning the ship around is extremely difficult. Well, you know, the culture is like an aircraft carrier. You don't turn it on a dime. And the left has been at it since the founding of the Frankfurt School at the very latest, which would be in the mid-1920s. And they have everything going their way, and I'm going to show you exactly the extent to which they have everything going their way later in this show as I recount personal experiences I've had not only in the past week but in the past few hours that will, I think, shine new light on that. But thank you, Klaus. I hope that you're continuing to fight the good fight up there in Sweden. You need to realize that these people have nothing less in store for you than the death and destruction of your race, your nation, your racial kith and kin. That is the end game. If you want to know what the end game they have in store for Sweden is, take a look at Zimbabwe and South Africa today and look up what's on the internet, what's happening to white people there. That's what they have in store for all of us if we don't wake up and smell the coffee soon.
And Klaus quite accurately described Sweden as a politically correct high ground. That perhaps is another understatement. But here's a story coming out of Sweden this week that made some news internationally. Paint is now racist, Keith. You probably didn't know that paint could be racist, an inanimate liquid used to cover walls and things of that nature. But yes, that kind of paint, that's the kind of paint we're talking about, is racist, according to a complaint that was filed in Sweden. And you ask yourself, will the absurdity ever stop? This story out of Stockholm, a Swedish teenager has filed a complaint against a paint producer that labeled the color beige as skin color. So basically there was a beige can of paint, and they said that the name of that was skin tone. Thyra is 14 years old. Her last name wasn't reported. She discovered the paint sold by Universal Color and Chemicals at school. By renaming beige to skin color, they show that there is a whiteness norm in society. This is a 14-year-old writing. In Sweden, for God's sake. It's completely sick, she says, that they just rename beige to skin color when black and brown are also skin colors. Thyra has taken her complaint to the Equality Commission on the basis that the term skin color is racist. You really can't make this up. You people probably think I'm getting to a punchline here, but no, this is sad but true. Why does she make the complaint, though? This is where the plot thickens. What would cause her, as a 14-year-old, to have that radar so keenly tuned in to racism or the specter of racism? Thyra's father said the young girl was motivated by her sister. Now, how'd that happen, I wonder? Her sister has brown skin, but according to the paint manufacturer, she has no skin color. I think the company just looked at themselves and imagined that's what skin was, he told the local newspaper. So, you know how it is with, like, women's stockings or leggings. If it's, they call it nude, nude leggings, for it looks sort of beige-ish, beige. There has to be something seriously and pathologically wrong with this family. They suffer from a mental illness that's called liberalism. That's really all there is to it, to be so upset to file a formal complaint and seek media publicity because they're so upset at beige being called skin color. Now, why are they so upset? It's because they have a mixed-race home. And as I said in an interview not long ago, for a television series, of course, that everyone knows will be coming out in January, I quoted Jared Taylor, and I said, if there's one word that can describe race relations, it's conflict. When you have multicultural societies or homes, there's going to be conflict. This conflict wouldn't have existed had that not been the case in her home. I firmly believe that. But if I were Swedish, I would be much more worried about the skyrocketing rapes that are occurring there. The Muslim on indigenous Swedish rapes that have skyrocketed. Sweden now has the second, we covered this story last year as well. Sweden now has the second highest number of rapes in the world after only South Africa. 53.2 per 100,000 Swedish women are raped. It's 6 times higher than the United States. I would be more worried about that, that my country has the second highest percentage of rapes in the world, and it's almost without exception Muslim men raping blonde-haired Swedish women. I would be more concerned about that than paint cans, but that's just me.
Well, you know, you said that multicultural societies are defined by conflicts. Let me break it down even in simpler terms. Multiracial societies have conflict. Ann Coulter, as mainstream of conservative as she is, has been quoted as saying, "When in human history has multiculturalism and multiracialism ever been anything than a source of problems for any society?" And she's absolutely right on point. We don't seem to understand that what European history has been a history of over the past century is breaking down nations into racially homogeneous units. That's the only reason that we have peace today in Europe, because that process has worked itself out, Dave. We need to give you a couple of words now from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend.
All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. I took a little bit of extended time to set the table for that last story out of Sweden. And, of course, had to compare and contrast and ask the rhetorical question, what is a more serious offense? The fact that a paint company in Sweden lists or names a can of beige paint as skin color, or the fact that Sweden and Swedish women are being raped like it's going out of style. If I was a native Swede, that would certainly be something that would be more concerning to me as a problem that my country faces, but not to the politically correct. Keith, I know you wanted to talk about that a little bit more. Then we're going to get to one more email that's actually a direct question to you that I've actually been waiting 2 or 3 weeks to get and to be able to break down with you. And then we've really got a lot of hard-hitting stuff coming up in the second and third hours as well, folks. We're just getting started. But back to Sweden, Keith.
Well, your protagonist in this story, Thyra of Sweden, who basically tries to get this paint company in trouble because she sees some type of implicit support for the white race in their calling a beige color of paint skin tone, is a perfect example of the hot topic that dominated the summer 2013 edition of the Occidental Quarterly, Volume 13, Number 2, Special Section, White Pathology. Part 1. White pathology is what Thyra represents. White pathology is not peculiar to Sweden. It's peculiar to the white race generally. And any place where there are significant numbers of white people, white Gentiles, you will find white pathology. White pathology specifically is race treason. Whites are race traitors in much greater numbers than blacks, Hispanics, Middle Easterners, Asians, Jews. None of these groups have significant numbers of race traitors in their midst because race treason is simply not tolerated. Here in Memphis, we have a black rabble-rouser named Thaddeus Matthews, who basically graces the airwaves of the local programming channel of the local cable TV station every evening through the week, Monday through Friday from 7 till 9 o'clock. Now, his main topic is always naming and shaming black race traitors that he sees operating in the Memphis political scene. He will not tolerate them. He works actively for their dispossession and destruction, their marginalization. And his message is so popular with Memphis blacks that he's on the radio, on the television 3 evenings a week for five evenings a week for 3 hours every evening. Now, if there were a similar feeling of racial solidarity among Memphis whites, James Edwards and I would be on the television 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week. But there isn't. And likewise, there isn't that type of racial solidarity among whites, even in Sweden. In fact, the way to float your boat, the way to succeed in business without really trying, both in Sweden, in America, in Great Britain, in Germany, in any white nation you can name, is to sell out your own kind. And that's what's so troubling about the current state of race relations in the world. William Lind, who has been on our show from the Center for Cultural Conservatism, has said that political correctness is cultural AIDS. And he's right. Political correctness is like AIDS in that, like AIDS, it disables our natural and normal racial immune system that protects us against the depredations and the aggressions of other races towards us. And as the rape rate in Sweden shows, with non-whites proliferating in the rape statistics, with victims being predominantly white women, it just shows you that the real danger is not from white people's racism towards non-whites, but non-white people's racism towards whites.
Folks, you'll really want to make a point to stay tuned to the second hour when Keith dives in with a full head of steam into a breakdown of an article that appeared in the most recent edition of the Occidental Quarterly that addresses the phenomenon of pathological altruism. Stay tuned for that scholarly discourse in the second hour. But before we get to Peter Scoop Stanton, who will be calling in the next segment, I want to quickly get this last email out of the way because it's a great one. Comes in from listener Charles. Hello, James. I wanted to write and ask you about something I think I heard you guys talk about once. Was there not a study done in the 1850s or 60s that basically came to the conclusion that it would be more cost-effective to own people as corporate slaves rather than having them owned individually? Something to that effect, that privately owned slaves cost more because you had to take care of them when they were a baby and then after they got too old to work as well. Not the case with corporatocracy. We're all slaves now. It seems like it was named after some town in Kentucky, but I just can't remember. Keith, I don't know exactly what the historical truth is behind that, but I'm guessing you might. The fact that as wage earners in corporate America, it's the new system of slavery that is allowed to thrive.
Well, I know of no particular academic study or scientific study that reached this conclusion. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, and quite frankly, he's whetted my appetite. I may look into that when I have an opportunity. But the history of slavery in the Western Hemisphere shows very clearly that slavery was on the way out and that there was never a need to have a war to end slavery anywhere in the Western Hemisphere. Slavery ended legally and without warfare in every nation in the Western Hemisphere by 1888. In 1888, the last holdout, Brazil, legally abolished slavery. Why was slavery allowed to be legislated out of existence? If it were so valuable to the captains of industry, to the economic elite of the nation, as the left would have you believe. It obviously was not. In fact, Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, who Abraham Lincoln said was largely responsible for the Civil War because her heartrending novel about the mistreatment of Southern slaves so motivated abolitionists in the North that they were willing to go to war, also had a quote that is never mentioned today towards the end of her life. After the Civil War, she married a Southerner who owned a plantation in Florida. She lived on this plantation in Florida and saw black-white relations in the South up close and personal firsthand. And towards the end of her life, when asked about the effect of Uncle Tom's Cabin on the Civil War and on the abolition of slavery, she said, "There was never a need for a war to end slavery because the capitalist class had discovered that wage slavery was much cheaper than chattel slavery for the exact reasons that our listener Charles mentioned in his letter." you know, you do not have to support non-productive children or non-productive old people in a wage for labor system, or wage slavery, as the critics of that system would call it. So consequently, there was never any question that slavery was out of date, was more expensive, and therefore doomed under a truly capitalist system. So just erase that particular fiction from your historical memory. Slavery was not the reason. Slavery was not the reason for the Civil War. We go into this exhaustively every April during Confederate History Month. We'll do it again this year. James, back to you.
Thank you, Keith. We're going to take a break, folks. Stay tuned. More to come right after this on The Political Cesspool.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Which do you love best, Thanksgiving dinner or leftovers? The meal takes such time and effort, you wish it was easier so you could have it more often. Well, right now it is, right now you can. Imagine your family enjoying the ultimate comfort food easily during stressed out times of a disaster or emergency, or outdoors while camping or hiking. The freeze-dried feast from Freeze Dry Guy is a special case of Thanksgiving dinner, ready for you any day of the year for at least 25 years. Freeze-dried turkey tetrazzini, green beans, dehydrated potatoes and sweet potatoes, yes, even dessert. This delicious feast is ready to eat when you want or need it most, easily, in just minutes. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD. There's free shipping, plus your family could win a free traditional Thanksgiving dinner. Go now to freezedryguy.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to The Political Cesspool. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here in the studio in Memphis. Peter Scoop Stanton connecting now via telephone from Washington, D.C., or the greater D.C. area. And Scoop sent me a story earlier this week. He is a native New Yorker, after all. And we're going to talk about it now since he's on the line with us. Bill de Blasio, the new mayor of New York City, in all truthfulness, as I wrote on the blog, he should be the new mayor of New York City, because a white man married to a black lesbian is exactly the kind of degenerate who should serve as the face of such a disgusting and despicable place. This story that Scoop sent us came from the New York Daily News. I'm just going to read a couple of excerpts from it. Bill de Blasio's wife opened up about falling in love with a man after years of identifying as a lesbian. Charlene McRae, another reason you know that they're liberal, she doesn't even take her husband's last name, Charlene McRae, not de Blasio, mind you, said her relationship with de Blasio was made possible by putting aside the assumptions I had about the form and package that my love would come in. The interview in Essence magazine comes 34 years after McRae penned a groundbreaking 1979 essay entitled, I Am a Lesbian. A dozen years later, in 1991, McRae met de Blasio while she worked for the New York Commission on Human Rights. This is better and better. And while the man was then aide to Mayor David Dinkins. I was wearing West African-inspired clothing and a nose ring, and Bill says he had a love-at-first-sight experience. I did note that he was a good-looking guy. McRae said the fact that he was a man and white did not deter her. All I could think about was that he was 6 years younger than me, she said. And so you go on and you read this article. You know, that was supposed to be a deterrent, that he was a male and white. You know, that would have been reason for her as a black lesbian and obviously a superior creature to dismiss him. But you read this and it just waxes on as if this is just the greatest love story. How incredible. You're supposed to read it and just get all teary-eyed about how, you know, they found one another. We got a picture of the de Blasio family. If anyone's ever seen Predator with our good friend Sonny Landham and Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bill de Blasio's wife kind of looks like the alien in that. And I'm not just saying that to be crude. It's just the dreadlocked hair, the teeth kind of reminds me of the Predator. But we'll let Keith tear into this. If you go to the link, by the way, before we let Scoop go after it first, if you go, we always link to the articles that we're analyzing. There's a pretty detailed photo spread of the de Blasio family in the article that we use as our source. And I think my favorite picture is one of the woman hugging a tree in Ghana. Just hugging a tree, because trees are greater than people. Scoop, take it away.
Good evening, Cesspool family. Well, what an introduction.
Well, you found that one. You found that one, and you knew that was fodder for the cesspool if there ever was one.
Right. Well, the city of New York got exactly what they deserve. They're one of the reasons why Ms. McRae didn't take de Blasio's last name, because he switches names like he switches the socks. Now, if you go online, you can read further into that. But I guess the good citizens of New York were sick and tired of low crime, clean, safe streets, a school board that is finally under city control and that they're changing things for the better, and good business practices. First, you had Giuliani, who came in 1993, who cleaned up the city. Times Square, you wouldn't be caught dead during the daylight hours, now has Disney stores and very family-friendly. Michael Bloomberg, who I have issues with a whole bunch of other things, ran a multi-billion dollar business and took a salary from the taxpayers of $1. So now New Yorkers yearn for the good old days of David Dinkins, Ed Koch, and Abraham Beam. Now, Bill de Blasio had a very, very savvy advertising campaign team. He put pictures of his son on the campaign commercials.
Right, which his son. We got a picture of him, too, on this website.
Right. Now, Ms. McRae is a very dark-skinned woman, and Bill is obviously a white man. But if you look at his son, he looks almost 100% black. And on top of that, he has this ginormous afro.
So, It looks like something out of like the ABA in the 70s.
Right.
Like Dr. J.
Right. Well, I mean, if the kid wants to have an afro, that's not, you know, let the kid have an afro. I know,
sure.
It doesn't bother me. But the young de Blasio saying, Bill de Blasio, he's against stop and frisk, he's against police brutality, he's against this, that, and the other thing. And so then the black New Yorker seeing this dark-skinned, afro-wearing juvenile on the TV thinking, oh, de Blasio must be black, and he's going to put handcuffs on the cops. So on election day this year, when I was watching the Virginia governor outcome and the New York City race, myself, radio personality Anthony Cumia, and a bunch of other people were putting pictures of what New York's going to look like come January 2nd, 2014, and all we did was copy and paste of New York City back in the 1970s, because that's exactly what's going to happen to the five boroughs of New York City. Now, de Blasio, he's got a thing. He wants to put the handcuffs on police, and he wants to make the rich pay the fair share. I took it that the rich people that live in the five boroughs are going to get a huge tax break because they got to carry the burden of everybody else that's on the dole. So back to you in the studio.
That reminds me of a rant I want to get into about how Obamacare is going to affect what I pay in a premium for insurance. Mine's going to more than double. I don't even know if I'll be able to carry it, but I think it's a crime not to have insurance after Obamacare, right? But that's another topic. But it's just, you know, talking about the great redistribution of wealth that always comes with liberal plans. But Keith, getting back to this story, and great commentary, Scoop, by the way. You know, we diversify our staff with Scoop. We got to have one Northerner. And he fits the bill. He's our token, you know. Just kidding, Scoop. All right, but Keith, what do you take out of this? What jumped out to you the most? The fact that she had a hoop in her nose when they met? The fact that de Blasio was a man in white? You know, she didn't let that, you know, count as two strikes against him. And she's a lesbian, but she can, you know, she's not going to be boxed into the package. Her love will come in. Just it just reads as though it's just this, the greatest story ever told, and you're just supposed to cheer and applaud such degeneracy.
It's the greatest story ever told if you have totally succumbed to the evil that is modern liberalism. You know, one of our catchphrases here at the Political Cesspool is liberalism is the modern face of evil. This is a perfect example of this. In this particular little morality tale, black is good, white is bad. Lesbianism is good, heterosexual relations are bad. Racial mixing is good, racial homogeneity, staying with your race, is bad. Now, what's obviously happened in New York is that the people of New York, the voters, yearn for white leadership because they've had a belly full of black leadership under David Dinkins and other leftists in the past that have shown them that having black political leadership is the fast track, the fast lane to ruin and economic collapse, just as it has proven to be in Camden, New Jersey, in Birmingham, Alabama, in Detroit, Michigan. The list goes on and on. So they elect a white person. But the elites aren't going to let these people escape their fate so easily. They will give them a white person, all right, a person that's white on the outside but black on the inside, like the current mayor of New York, a man who is a consummate race traitor, a person who despises the white race, who has chosen a black wife, not only a black wife, but a black lesbian wife. He despises everything that is biblical, everything that is good, everything that is moral, and he is the only acceptable white man to the powers that be, to the elites of New York, and he is their handpicked man to be the mayor of New York, thereby gulling all the simpletons out there that thought they were actually getting a bona fide white man as their mayor.
And look at the competition that he had, too. Anthony Weiner and some, I can't even remember her name, but some outspoken lesbian woman that was running as a primary candidate. But another thing that just came up, the Huffington Post was lamenting the fact that a recent poll has shown that more people in the United States believe that it is appropriate to display a Confederate flag than the rainbow homosexual pride flag. I think I'd have to go back and find it, but I believe 58% of the respondents said that there shouldn't be a negative connotation with displaying the Confederate flag, where only 28% said that shouldn't be a negative connotation with the homosexual flag. So that's a bit of good news to punctuate the dreariness of that segment. We'll be back with more folks in the second hour. Thank you, Scoop, for your contributions tonight. We love you, brother.
No problem. Talk to you next week.
The pool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.